absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig interkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to episode 37 of Absolutely Intercultural, and thanks for tuning in again, wherever you may be listening from. And we reserve a special welcome to all our new listeners in Africa, South America, and Asia. As you can see on the so-called cluster map on our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com, we are getting more and more hits from these parts of the world, and it's great to have you with us on our little intercultural journey. Well, it's August, and at least in the Northern Hemisphere, the holiday season is in full swing.
Holidays. Even when I only see the written word in an email message, it quickly seems to create pleasant pictures in my mind. I immediately think about beaches, mountains, islands, and maybe you too think about your favorite places. And when you are on a holiday, don't you sometimes develop fantasies about leaving your normal life behind and not going back? About getting away from it all for good? Or at least for a little longer than just the holiday? Well, in this episode, I've interviewed three people who have done exactly that, but all in their different ways. We'll start with Jens Alderath, one of our very internationally mobile students, who first went to Australia for 8 months for his practical semester 2 years ago, then went to South Africa twice since he returned, after that spent some weeks in Austria and Ireland, and is, as we are speaking, planning now to go back to South Africa after he will have finished his studies. Although I think he's only 23 years old, Jens seems to have become a world citizen. But what do his family and friends think about the constant series of farewells? Well, he'll tell us for our first category, absolutely itchy feet.
When I first told my mom that I wanted to go to South Africa, she was like, oh.
At the end of the show, Jens will tell us about his future plans too. But before that, we listen to Alessandro from Italy, who will tell us what has brought him to Thailand 3 years ago for our second column, Absolutely Musical.
My previous life was about heavy metal, and this life is about classical music.
And for our third column, Absolutely Free, the teacher Ralf Klatt shares with us why he had to get away from it all, took a sabbatical year from his teaching job, and what happened to him during his 3 month motorcycle trip in the USA.
This is it for me, because I have to get out.
And right after the second part of the interview with our travel holic Jens, Lisa has prepared some advice on how to improve your English skills for our fourth column, Absolutely Lifelong. But now Jens has some stories to tell, so let's listen to him.
Well, there are some stories. During my study, I had to go for a practical semester, which I planned long term. So
is that a part of your studies? Does everybody go abroad during their practical semester?
Not everybody goes abroad, but everybody has to do a practical learning session in a company. So, and I decided for myself to go abroad to actually learn English better. That was the aims before.
Where did you go?
I went to Australia. I stayed there for about 8 months. It was 6 months I did that internship thing, and afterwards I traveled throughout Australia with a friend of mine for about 3 months.
Okay, but that wasn't your own trip. You've been abroad several times. Where else did you go?
I went actually twice to South Africa, which wasn't planned that long ago, which I actually decided within a month to go the second time back to South Africa. So
was that a kind of learning process, that the second time you didn't need so much preparation?
Absolutely. It was like how I changed at my first day during Australia, that I really made things more spontaneous than I did before. So I decided to go the first time to South Africa within 2 months. Mm-hmm. And I decided to go back to South Africa after coming back home, like within in a week or so. So like it's a learning process which I had during my stays abroad.
Right. Of course, before you went, you didn't know about these learning processes, really. You couldn't plan them. But what were your reasons to leave?
As I said, my first reasons to leave to Australia was to learn the language, actually, to get more education. And now for my second tour or third tour to South Africa, it was more like that I have to go and see something else, also about the next steps in life, to be sure to get a job wherever I want to work. So in the whole world, it's just that it worked out to be South Africa. And
right. So you could imagine moving there for a longer period of your life?
Without any doubts. I mean, I really want to see as much as possible from the world. And in South Africa, for example, I have the opportunity to work there in the company I did that internship. So I have a job offer from there, and I probably, gonna make it there during the next couple of years or so.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said that you wanted to improve your English. That obviously worked out for you. What other things happened during your time abroad? Can you put your finger on it and give us examples, maybe, of how this has changed your attitude, maybe?
One thing I would say is like my spontaneous, that I'm doing things spontaneous. The other thing that I think that my horizon opened more than before, and I'm getting an opener person. That's for example, yesterday I waited at the train station, and there was an American guy, and the American guy was wandering around and so, and I asked him what's going on, and we had a wonderful chat. He told me about the trip to Europe. He was backpacking through Europe. It was such a wonderful experience, and experience like that I wouldn't have done before my stays in Australia and South Africa.
Why do you think you're doing this now?
It's just because I'm interesting and maybe more self-confidence to speak with the people, to just, you know, talk with them about what's there. And I have to tell also them stories. So we have a good basis to speak, to have a good conversation. And I really, you can learn during that process, you can learn so much about how they did their trips. You know, for example, he went to a brewery I've never heard before, and it's the rarest beer ever in the whole wide world. It's in Belgium, and he told me from that place, and it's in the middle of nowhere, and it's like there's a cornfield, and you get just that beer you can just buy in the cafe next to that brewery.
Well, that almost sounds as if through your trips you had entered a kind of new culture of people who move around the world and have a lot to tell. Could that be the link between you and these people now?
Yeah, I would say, because I figured out for myself that's something I really enjoy to do, and I really love to speak with that people. Mm. So I really come perfectly along with that people. I mean, I also enjoying to have friends everywhere. Like, I have a friend in Las Vegas. I have a friend in South America who's staying. So it's really, it makes me feel good to have friends all over the world. So you could say that I really entered a society of travel.
World citizenship.
World citizenship, exactly.
We will come back to Jens at the end of the show, where he shares with us how his family and his friends cope with his extensive traveling plans. At the beginning of the show, Alessandro from Italy said that his life has been about heavy metal, but has now changed to classical music. Well, let's find out what he really meant by that.
Okay, so I've been in Thailand for 3 years so far, and basically my employment was at the opera. I found this job because my graduation thesis was about the books written by a Thai guy who made it big in America as a writer. And he ended up writing like 42, 43 novels. He's a very big name in the science fiction horror literature.
Oh, right.
One of his books is, you know, one of the books that they use at science fiction classes in American universities. He's a quite big writer. He's a friend of, you know, Stephen King and all of these people. But then, certain point in his life, he decided to go back to Thailand and to focus on music instead of literature, because that's the way he is. It's like a little genius, you know. He can do a lot of things.
So what did you do before you came to Thailand?
Well, I was working...
What is your line? What's your business?
Well, do you really want to know? It was totally different. I was working with stainless steel.
All right.
So in a way you can say my previous life was about heavy metal and this life was about classical music. Well, anyway, I met this guy for an interview because I wanted to write a graduation thesis about his books, and then he asked me whether I could help the chorus. He wanted me to be the coach, the language coach for the chorus, for the Italian operas.
Right. So teach them Italian for the opera.
Just pronunciation, you know, not grammar, no grammar and no language. Just, you know, the way they should pronounce.
Do these people usually know what they are singing?
They do. They approximately know. Yes, more or less. They know the meaning of the whole thing. Okay. We don't translate word by word. So, although they ask me a lot. So that's how it started. You know, I didn't really take it seriously. I thought I was gonna stay here for a while and just, you know, coach the chorus with Italian language. But then gradually I had more and more tasks inside the opera, and I ended up working, you know, full time at the office, and that was for almost 2 years. Yeah, it proved to be a great experience because I learned how to deal with how to work with people from a totally different culture. And, you know, of course, Thailand is not Italy, it's not Europe. People have a different approach to work, and I had to, you know, wake up. I had to wake up and to just, you know, find out how to deal with a lot of situations that I would never have thought about.
What kind of situations would be different from working in Italy, for example?
The way things are organized and the time when things are, you know, finally being done, because although Italy is probably a messier place than many other countries in Europe, we are organized and we plan things ahead. Now, I don't want to sound too negative about Thailand, because these people are very fast on doing things when they decide to do it. It's just that they decide to do it very late. So first, I didn't expect that. I didn't know. So no one told me, you know, because for them, it's just natural, I guess. So the first two operas, I was, you know, trying to organize or to help organize, proved to be a bit tough for me, because a couple of days before the actual performance, it turned out that many of the things that I thought were already done,
okay,
were not done. So yeah, I had to.
So how do you try to speed up things without losing your face?
The first time, I guess I got mad with a couple of people, but that's a no-no in Thailand. You should never scream. I didn't scream, but I was mad. And you shouldn't even show that you are mad. You should just try to be nice and tell them, like, okay, I think it's about time to do this thing. But, you know, I didn't know about it, and I just got mad. But they knew I was a foreigner, so they know how we deal with things, and they weren't surprised, but it didn't really solve the problem. The second time I tried a different approach, and a softer approach, and the third time I kind of knew how to deal with it, because in the meantime I had been talking to friends, and, you know, actually the best thing to do is, like, trying to work with people, together with people all the time, and check if they're doing what they say that they are doing.
Right. Did you learn anything from other expatriates, people who have lived here a little longer than you have?
Yeah, I sure did. First of all, my boss, the person I was talking about, lived in England. He graduated in England, and then he moved to the States, and he lived there for, like, I don't know, I guess 20 years of his life. So he is a Thai, but he is also a foreigner, and he told me very, you know, useful things about being Thai and being a foreigner and being a foreigner in Thailand. That helped me a lot. And of course, in the meantime, I had the chance of meeting a lot of people who had stayed in Thailand for a longer time than myself. Yeah, they helped me. They gave me a lot of information, useful information.
Any other tricks of the trade? How you deal with Thai people? Anything we should know? Maybe even for our holidays here?
to smile all the time. You have to smile a lot. When they smile at you, it doesn't mean that they like you. It just means they want to be nice to you because they want to make you feel welcome, I guess. Some of them do it because they want to sell some products. Some others just do it because they want to be nice. Maybe they don't like your face. Maybe they don't want to be with you. They don't want to talk with you, but they're happy that you're coming to Thailand. That's all. And work-wise, I think it all depends on how you say things. They're very formal on that. So you don't have to sound rude because it just won't get you anywhere. So it's all about the way you say things.
Well, Alessandro, thank you very much for sharing this with us. And we wish you all the best at the opera in Bangkok. But what would happen if his job became so stressful and tiring that he wanted to take a longer break? Could he take a whole year off? Well, this is exactly what Ralf Klatt did. Ralf is a teacher, and he took a so-called sabbatical year to get away from his daily routine in school. He toured the USA for 3 months with only one companion, his motorcycle.
Yes, the story behind it is, or was, that I'm a normal school teacher, and as some of you may know, being a school teacher can be a very strenuous job. So there was a time a couple of years ago in which I thought, you know, I've had it, I have to get out, I have to do something different. And in Germany, we have the opportunity to take a sabbatical. That means you can leave your job for a year and then get in again.
But I guess not many people do that. Had you heard about it from somebody else?
Yes, I heard about that. I don't know exactly where from or from who. I just heard it, and I said, you know, this is it for me, because I have to get out. School gets on my nerves, and I have to get out. So I took this opportunity to enlist for this sabbatical. And after 5 years of saving time, so to speak, it was there. So I was able to go.
All right. And then afterwards you went back to the job that you had before, or did you change jobs?
No, I went back to the same school and the same colleagues and all that. And I was, I must admit, I was more relaxed about it because I had a year to breathe and to think about other things. Uh-huh. And from then on, my job was more fun for some time than before. And after some time, I had it again. But, you know, I'm in for another sabbatical now. In 5 years, I will go away for another year.
All right. So would you recommend it to other people, or have you recommended it to other people?
I can recommend it, but it's not everybody's cup of tea in that respect, that you have to be you want to get out, but you have to be able to fill a complete year in which you are under no obligations whatsoever. A full year of free time can be a heavy burden if you haven't any plans.
You told us earlier about the effect that when you came back to your school, that somehow you found the work more rewarding, more acceptable in a way. Why do you think this is? I mean, why does a year abroad, does it give you a different perspective?
I was more relaxed as a person because I had been away for a year out of this rat race, and it is really a rat race if you are forced to go to work every day, and being a teacher is a stressful work. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have that for a year, so I was thrown back onto myself.
And you were completely on your own.
Nobody else had that amount of time that
right.
I had.
Yes.
Chance had it that I didn't really meet anyone in America who I could travel with. Mm-hmm. Which was okay.
Not even for short periods of time?
Not really, no. America doesn't seem to be that kind of country for that, because I was away with a tent, and campgrounds in America are different from German campgrounds. You hardly see anyone with a tent. They all go with their caravans, mm-hmm. and people you meet there are almost always families.
Oh, okay.
So you don't make these kind of contacts as you have here in Europe.
Mm-hmm. What did other people say when you came back? What was their perspective on you? Did people say that you had changed? Or
that was very, very amazing, because I had to realize that hardly anybody was interested in that in my trip. I expected that when I would come back, people would come, yo, you have been away in America for 3 months, tell us. And hardly anybody did that. They didn't.
Well, I'm so glad we're doing this interview now.
Yeah, so it's really the first time I'm talking about it.
Anybody's listening to me.
Being away for 3 months is not the time in which you can really change when you don't have any extreme experiences. So my friends didn't realize any changes within me.
Okay, isn't it already somehow extreme to be completely on your own for 3 months?
I'm a person who can get on with himself quite well, so that was okay for me. Mm. It is, of course, it is much more interesting if you can share events and moments with somebody, especially when after a long day of riding on the motorcycle, you want to share your experiences and your thoughts, and there is no one. That can be rather boring, and after a while, after 3 months, I had enough, and it was okay.
Did you try to compensate that somehow by writing a diary or writing letters or emails from internet cafes? Or how did you deal with this loneliness?
I wasn't really lonely because during the day there was a lot to see, a lot of experiences. Mm-hmm. But of course, yes, I wrote a diary, which I then put into a written form when I was home, about 60, 70 pages. And yes, whenever I entered a new city, a new town, the first thing I said, I asked for an internet cafe or a library, something where they had internet connections, access, and I had an email contact with people at home, yes.
But let's now come back to Jens. Do you remember? We promised that Jens would tell us more about the reactions of his friends and family to his extensive travel plans.
I mean, to go to Australia wasn't that thing where the people worried. I mean, I have that story when I first told my mom that I went to that I wanted to go to South Africa. She was like, "Oh," but it was like just a 5 second reaction.
And then you know why?
Yeah, I think all the circumstances and all the stereotypes you heard about South Africa, that the people get mugged and the people get robbed and you know, some girls get raped and stuff. Mm-hmm. The whole crime thing in South Africa is a little bit too worried about it before.
Is it difficult to keep your friends in Germany if you travel so much?
I wouldn't say that it's difficult to keep my friends. For sure, they say, "Oh, you're crazy or stuff." But I figured out that there are like two types of persons. For example, there are one that already traveled, and they are much more interested in the things, like much more. They tell me, "And how was your trip?" and stuff like that. And there are the other group of my friends which haven't traveled so far, and they're kind of not interesting. Or for example, my grandma, it is out of her world, you know. I mean, she's living in that house for 50 years or so, and then it is completely out of her horizon that I go and travel, being one day in Ireland, another day in Austria, or in South Africa, one day in Namibia, for example. You know, it's totally out of her world.
Any plans for the future, for the near future, for the longer distance maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, it's as I said, I am having that job offer to going to South Africa, and with the fact that in 2 years there will be the World Championship in soccer, that makes a good opportunity to that country. So I'm really seriously thinking about that one, but I also always wanted to learn Spanish. So like maybe a trip through South America after I finish my study is also an opportunity. But that's what it is. Like I can't tell you now what's happening in my life in four months.
Are you looking for realistic ways to improve your English and have some fun at the same time? Have you tried watching films in the original versions? Well, then this will strike a chord with you. Lisa Martin, one of our students here at the Rhine Arc campus, has come up with some great ideas, so the stage is all hers.
My name is Lisa. I present you the category Absolutely Lifelong. I like watching films in the original language, but sometimes I don't get the point because the actors talk too fast or have a strong accent. I think you all know that problem. Then I put on the subtitle in my mother tongue, and sometimes that helps. But it can be difficult to concentrate on the subtitle and the acting. So I change the original language into my mother tongue until I understand the whole scene, and then I switch the language back. So I watch the film in a German-English version. On most DVDs you can choose different languages, so it's no problem to try it out. I can really recommend this.
Wow, thank you very much for your ideas and your pieces of advice. Maybe you have inspired some of our listeners to do something similar and share their ideas with us. It would certainly be a great addition to our regular episodes.
Well, what do you think about this? Or about our other columns today? why don't you go to our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com and share your thoughts with us and your fellow listeners. Absolutely Intercultural is all about sharing and starting discussions, so we're always looking forward to your feedback.
Our next show will be coming to you from Denmark on August the 24th. So long.
Stay tuned.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tverkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.